I don't see it as much in Sammamish, or generally as much on the east side. But when I worked and lived in Seattle, it was everywhere. Both skilled and novice graffiti artists would tag, paint, or otherwise decorate plain surfaces, of which there are so many blank walls to act as canvases. I learned a lot working in a church that was regularly covered in layers of graffiti. For instance, at least in Seattle, it is your responsibility as the building owner to remove the graffiti as quickly as possible. Otherwise, the city will come in with their paint rollers and paint right over it, often in a color that was strikingly dissimilar from what it looked like before. Or, did you know that there's anti-graffiti paint? It's supposed to make it easier to wash off the spray paint and make the paint harder to stick. Now, I can't think about graffiti without also thinking about one of my favorite artists. It's the enigmatic street and graffiti artist from Britain named Banksy. I'm sure many of you have heard of him. His works have decorated places all over the world, and they are absolutely stunning, both for the humor that he puts in them, as much as for the poignance. He once said something that I really enjoyed. If graffiti changed anything, it would be illegal. Makes you think. Now, none of these anti-graffiti measures did all that much to curb the artistic or destructive, depending on your viewpoint, drive to paint. Nor did it really hide it all that well. You can't really ignore the presence of graffiti in the community. It's kind of the point. It's in your face with messages and symbols meant to provoke. And the truth of the matter is that some graffiti I have seen, it's downright stunning. Others have been sincere and challenging and thought-provoking. I have taken pictures over the years of the pieces of graffiti that have moved me the most. And I was flipping through my photos this week, and these are the ones I came across. There was "Find Me" written on a metal street barrier. "Freedom from Money," as well as "Love Life," sprayed onto the side of a dumpster. "The healthcare system is impressive," somehow fit on a tiny no parking sign, all done with spray paint. Now that was skill. "Always carry a Bible," heart, in bright pink letters across a drab gray wall. And possibly my favorite, "The world is charged with the grandeur of God," a direct quote from the poet Gerard Manley Hopkins, written in large letters with Sharpie on the side of a bright gold spray-painted van. None of these statements are wrong. In fact, they're all dripping with truth. But each and every one was quick to get covered up and erased. They were inconvenient to see, and even more inconvenient, I think, to think about. Wisdom cries out in the street. In the squares, she raises her voice. At the busiest corner, she cries out. At the entrance of the city gates, she speaks. Now, this voice talking to us in Proverbs is Lady Wisdom. It is the personification of God's abounding wisdom in the form of a woman, a symbol of the poise and thoughtfulness that true wisdom has, countering a sea of bellowing men. but it should be said, wisdom is not knowledge. Knowledge is something that can be used for personal gain. It can be used for power. It can be traded as a commodity, and it's inert. It lacks the pull, the intrigue, and the repercussions that wisdom brings with it. Wisdom very much is like a street preacher. She isn't confined to churches and spaces of higher learning. She isn't available just to a select few. She is there, she is out there, in the face of everyone, and accessible to everyone. She comes to us in the messiness of our lives, speaking words that we can hear in the here and now. And graffiti beguiles us and speaks to us in a similar way. It is accessible to all and the property of none. Its presence is known in the alleyways and the forgotten places of our world, but its messages are no less significant than famous works of art that are protected behind glass in museums. Banksy sees the purpose of such artistic expression succinctly. Art should comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. It sounds a lot to me like the message of Jesus. And I'm sure Peter was quite uncomfortable when Jesus called him Satan. I would be. And I'm sure his disciples were more than a little put out by Jesus' insistence that they too must face their crosses, as well as the paradoxical notion that in order for them to save their lives, they have to lose them. And that's the thing about wisdom and graffiti. They can both be difficult pills to swallow. Neither may tell us what we want to hear, but both will tell us what we need to hear. Now, we are probably happy to hear wisdom tell us, "I will pour out my thoughts to you. I will make my words known to you." That's comforting. We'll know all that we need to know. Wisdom cares for us. But it also points out unfortunate truths. In the very next verse, wisdom declared, "Because I have called and you refused, have stretched out my hand and no one heeded, and because you have ignored all my counsel and would have none of my reproof, I will also laugh at your calamity. I will mock when panic strikes you, when panic strikes you like a storm, and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come over you. Then they will call upon me, but I will not answer." Whew. Seems a bit harsh, but one really does flow from the other. Now, you can call it whatever you want. Cause and effect, karma, the natural order of things. It just simply is true. It's not possible to be given everything and then reject it and still find yourself possessing everything. Just as those who are ashamed of Jesus, the Son of Man will also be ashamed of them. Now, I want you to think of something that you wouldn't want to share with others. Maybe it's something that you did or said. Maybe there were witnesses. Maybe you were alone. I want you to just think about that one thing. And if you're at all like me, it makes me cringe inside. And I have to believe that Jesus was cringing or disappointed or smacking his head at the same time. Jesus knows that we can do better. Jesus knows that we can strive for great things. And why not strive for a place where all people who feel lost are found? Why shouldn't we work toward a world where money is not a defining factor of who we are, and instead remove this great discrepancy between the haves and the have-nots? Shouldn't we all care that the healthcare system is oppressive to some? That there are people who have to make a choice between their lives or a lifetime of debt? Wouldn't it be grand if each person carried their particular holy book with them? Not for bragging rights or a prop that they can hold up, but because they sincerely read and meditate on the divine. A world where a person can honestly say, "I love life." Isn't that what we all want? A better world. One, as the Talmud describes, where past generations actually care about the futures of those they haven't met yet, those that they may never meet. Where love is the guiding force behind all of our actions. I don't know about you, but to me, that sounds like a world that is charged with the grandeur of God. And this world is the one that Jesus came to usher in. He may not be a weapon-wielding, conquering Messiah, but his empire is just as radical and just as dangerous. After all, Banksy said once again, there is nothing more dangerous than someone who wants to make the world a better place. Maybe after 2,000 years of domestication, Christianity needs to revisit its radical, life-changing roots. Jesus was illegal. Jesus was guilty of sedition, and Jesus was crucified for it, after all. And so, wisdom, let us be attentive. If graffiti changed anything, it would be illegal. Oh, right, it is.